Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in South Central Iowa and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA and KRLS. Now with today's In-Depth, here's Dr. Bob Leonard.
Too many children across the state need our help. Let's go in depth with Carrie Phillips, coordinator of court-appointed special advocates. Carrie, what are Iowa court-appointed special advocates? What do they do?
They are appointed to one case at a time that are in the juvenile court system. So children who have been abused or neglected by their parents or caregivers. And so our advocates kind of do their own independent investigation. So they will meet the child face-to-face at least once a month, talk to the parents, talk to daycare providers, schools, lawyers, anybody who they think might have information. They gather that information, and then they write a report that goes directly to the juvenile court judge that states kind of a summary of their contact, their concerns, and then ultimately their recommendations for that child.
And these court-appointed special advocates are volunteers.
Yes. Yep.
That's pretty amazing to me. It would seem that in a perfect world, they'd be trained professionals doing this.
Yep. Our volunteers come from all walks of life. So we have people that, we have retired teachers, we have, stay-at-home parents, we have, from all different socioeconomic backgrounds, just people who care about kids and want what's, best for them. So.
Well, and I want to say to people, just to let them know that in part we're having volunteers because of budget cuts, and then you aren't able to serve all counties because of budget cuts a few years ago from the state.
Correct, yeah.
And so there are counties that aren't served, is that correct?
That is correct, yes. At one point we used to serve 99 counties, all 99 counties in the state. But I think it's been about 6 years ago we had budget cuts that really hit us, and so we had to choose to serve the most populous areas. And so we did have to pull out of some of those rural counties.
Okay, and so you do have services in Warren County, Marion County, Polk.
Yep.
Any other surrounding counties?
Jasper, Madison, pretty much all the ones around Polk County, the ones with the higher. We also cover Eastern, we're all over the state, so Eastern and Western Iowa as well. But
like to the south, there's nobody.
Yeah, pretty much. We're less populous down there, smaller counties. There's not a whole lot down there, so.
All right, I don't want to belabor that. It's just sort of sad. But what we want to do, though, is you want to reach out and get more volunteers to help where we can help.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and so you meet the kid. And how old might they be?
They can be anywhere from newborn to 18. And in fact, if a child is turns 18 and they're still in the foster care system, we can continue to serve them until they're 19, kind of help them transition into adulthood. So.
All right, so it could be a newborn that mm-hmm. was born into a bad situation.
Yep.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation with Carrie Phelps, coordinator of court-appointed special advocates. And so are these kids, are they sometimes with their parents still, or with a parent still, or in foster care, or both?
They could be both. Yep, they could be still with their parents with the new Family First that DHS has rolled out. They're trying to keep as many families together as possible. So a lot of the cases that we're seeing now, the children are still, if it's a safe, relatively safe place, the children are still with their parents. Obviously, if it's not a safe environment, then they're removed and in foster care or some type of foster care placement.
Okay, so the person doing this then checks in once a month with the kid, with mm-hmm. the child, with whoever the caregiver is.
Yep.
And with the schools or preschool,
mm-hmm.
And anybody else I'm not thinking of?
They could check with any therapists, doctors. Okay. When we get appointed, the judge signs an order that appoints us to the case. And in that order, it states that we have the right to talk to basically anybody about the child. So we don't have to have a release for talking to doctors like a lot of people would have to have, you know, if we want to find out about their well child checkups or if they're in therapy or something like that. We don't have to have a separate release for that. The judge signs an order saying that we have that authority to do that.
So you can say what are their meds?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And how are they doing?
What kind of concerns do you have? Are they, you know, maybe developmentally delayed or are they on target? Things like that, yeah.
Well, what kind of training do the volunteers get? There has to be some training.
Absolutely, yep. Our volunteers go through pretty rigorous 30 hours of training. It's probably more than that by the time they get all done. We talk about just the basics of the social welfare system. We talk about some of the laws that would apply. And then a lot about how just to advocate, ask questions, obviously write their court report, stuff like that. So usually when we get done, our advocates feel pretty confident about, you know, going in. But obviously there's a little bit of nerves involved when you're, you know, dealing with the life of a child and making those recommendations. But, they make the recommendations. It doesn't necessarily mean that the judge is going to follow those recommendations. But a lot of times our reports we've found, you know, judges tell us that our reports are ones that they read first because it doesn't go over the back history and stuff that you read every single time. It talks specifically about, you know, what's going on right now, you know, what are the concerns right now, is there services? And they even report on services that maybe the parents might need that are, you know, obviously going to benefit the child in the long run if the parents are getting mental health services and maybe parenting skills, stuff like that.
All right. So very interesting. I presume there's a background check involved.
Yep. We do background checks. We do references. It's a lot like, you know, doing a job interview. We sit down and we talk with the potential volunteer. We have to have 3 positive reference checks of people that you've known for more than 5 years. And then we do several different background checks on, you know, the child abuse registry and all those fun background checks.
Yeah. Okay. That's important.
Yes, absolutely. You know, child safety is obviously key. So we want to make sure that we're not putting child at danger by having these advocates meeting with them. So.
More in depth after this.
Continued my conversation with Carrie Phelps, coordinator of court-appointed special advocates. Do you advocate for one child at a time, or do some people do more?
Generally, it's I would say one family at a time because sometimes there's multiple children in the same family, so the advocate would take that one case. So there might be 2 or 3 siblings, but generally speaking, we do one family at a time. If a volunteer has lots of time on their hands and thinks that they can handle it, we may make an exception, but that's kind of rare. We like to let them have that focus on that one case.
Right, and it would have to be somebody that was very experienced.
Oh, yes. You know, that's kind of one of the benefits of a CASA is that, you know, the DHS workers and the guardian ad litems and everybody else has multiple cases. So it's hard to focus the time and dedication sometimes to one specific case. So that's kind of an advantage that we have to where they can focus just on that one family.
Now, does the person, the advocate, do they become a kind of a mentor to the child or do they just observe, talk, ask questions, and then report?
We're basically observe and report. Obviously, there has to be some kind of rapport between the child and the advocate, or they're not going to talk a whole lot. But they build that rapport depending on the age, you know, that we kind of teach different ways of doing that. If they're younger kids, going for walks or playing games, things like that. But we're different than like the big brother, big sister, where there's, you know, specifically a mentor. Now we do have, like I talked about earlier, the transitioning youth program, which is for those older kids that are like 14 and older. And that's more of a mentoring program, kind of getting them through their older teenage years and into adulthood. If they don't have other maybe good role models that are old enough, or people maybe even that don't even know maybe how to apply for college or find housing and things like that. So
it would be hard. Well, sometimes it would be hard. I mean, sometimes you know when a parent is a bad parent, like mm-hmm. if they come to a meeting and dad's drunk or something.
Yeah.
Or something. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it's sort of hard to tell whether, I mean, let's say the dishes aren't done. You know, well, lots of us don't have the dishes
right.
done all of the time.
Yep.
But, I mean, so how do you tell whether or not they're in a good environment? What are the things that you look for?
A lot of things we look for is the interaction between the parent and the child. Like I said, it's going to depend a lot on the age of the child. But if the parent is doing the things that the judge has ordered, so if they're doing, let's say the judge has ordered parenting classes, has ordered that they go to therapy or drug treatment, if they've checked all those boxes, we can't, or DHS can't keep a case open just because they have questions. You know, if they've done A, B, and C that the judge that they removed the child for, DHS has to return the child back. So, you know, as an advocate, we check through those things that the judge has ordered and that the DHS worker has said these were our initial concerns. And if they've hopefully completed all those things, then our concerns are less. We teach our advocates a lot about minimum sufficient level of care. The house may not be the way you and I keep our house. There might be dirty dishes or laundry, but if it's not a safety concern, then we would have to recommend returning the child home if all those other things, boxes have been checked.
Yeah, because people are different. You can still be a good parent with a
Absolutely.
Messy house.
Yep. And you can still be a parent if you have, you know, depression or, you know, bipolar. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad parent. But if they're addressing those issues sufficiently, then, you know, they can have the opportunity to be a good parent.
Is there a chance that you just become, I mean, loving kids is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and wanting to help them is easy. Is there a chance that people can get O2 involved? Does that happen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's definitely, that's one of the major concerns of a lot of people, because when they come to our program to volunteer, they have a passion for kids and helping kids. And so it is hard to not get too attached. But we, in our pre-service training, we talk a lot about, you know, being open and honest with your coordinators or your coaches, if you have a volunteer coach, and just, you know, telling them if you're concerned about getting too attached. And we talk about, you know, self-care and stuff like that. But that could definitely be a concern. And if our advocates are starting to feel that way, or as a coordinator, if I start to see that in their work, you know, I might be bringing that to their attention that maybe they need to step back a little bit and take a break, or maybe have somebody else take the case if it gets that extreme. But
right. And all the professional standards have been laid out.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
You'll teach us all about that.
Yep.
And so where do people learn more about this if they want to become a volunteer?
They can go to our website. We have a couple different websites that go directly to the same one, CASAiowa.org, and that will take you to our child advocacy website.
It's that easy.
It's that easy.
And then you just... So is there a form
yep,
or is it an
yep.
email you fill out?
There is several different things on there. You can find out more about our program. You can fill out an application right there online that goes directly to the coordinators that serve that area.
And you need more people.
Absolutely. Yes. It would be wonderful if we could have enough advocates so that every child in the juvenile court system had an advocate. We're a long ways away from that right now, but that's kind of our goal.
I'm afraid to even ask how many advocates you need.
A lot.
A lot. Okay. Right. So anybody listening, that a lot of people that are in retirement are looking for something of value to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for me to think about, well, of course, there's all kinds of good things that matter where you can make a difference. But
sure.
Working with the children to make sure they're safe and in the right environment seems like a pretty darn good challenge
mm-hmm.
to really matter.
Yeah. And it is definitely rewarding. A lot of our volunteers are of the retirement age that are looking for something, you know, to give back. And this is definitely a good agency to do that with. You know, children are our future, and what better investment than to invest in our future?
Can you share a particularly interesting, poignant, valuable story where a CASA volunteer made a big difference?
Oh, there's so many of them to try to pinpoint one off the top of my head. You know, there's been several that I can think of where the CASA advocate has gotten information maybe that DHS didn't have and then brought that, you know, to the foresight. You know, maybe their recommendations were completely different than everybody else's. But they had done the work, the legwork, the investigation to find out that, you know, these are concerns that we have. And so the judges really looked at that and asked questions and realized that they had the time to do the investigation maybe that nobody else had done. And so the judge followed the CASA's recommendations instead of the state's recommendations. That doesn't always happen. A lot of times we make the same recommendations, but, you know, we don't shy away if our recommendations are different than that of the state or DHS workers. So.
And when it happens and you know that you've had the time and and ability to do the job to put the child, to make sure the child is in a safe situation, that must be pretty rewarding.
Yes, very much so. And to be able to see, you know, whether it's a case that the child gets to go home to their parents or, you know, if it's an unfortunate case to where the parental rights end up to be terminated, to see that case through and see the child reach permanency, whether that's with their biological parents or with maybe an adoptive family, that's definitely a rewarding situation to see the best placement for that kid.
Thanks to Carrie Phelps for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe. An audio copy of today's in-depth program is available at KNIAKRLS.com on demand or for download. Just click podcasts. If you have topics or show ideas you'd like to hear in-depth, contact KNIAKRLS by sending an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's local news and the number one news and information source in South Central Iowa is KNIAKRLS.